degree of detail and specificity that you've given us.
Thank you.
Would you like to speak to that, or?
Yes, just briefly. Should commence by saying that it is the association's policy and has been for some time that it is in support of superannuation and tax legislation that is not discriminatory against same-sex partners. We, in our submission, tried to identify where discrimination is occurring, even though we have had some... Thanks. Even though we have had some significant changes to address some areas of discrimination reasonably recently. The areas that we identified were in contribution splitting. Fairly recent government legislation allows splitting of superannuation contributions between spouses, including de facto spouses. This applies to contributions made from 1 January 2006. The way the splitting works is that it allows the fund member to split their compulsory and personal super contributions with their spouse to enable them to receive part of the contribution. Up to 100% of personal contributions can be split with a spouse, while 85% of deductible contributions, such as the employer contributions, can be split. This doesn't apply to same-sex couples. They're unable to split their contributions. Now, the main impact of this is that if you are able to split your contributions, you can get, when you receive the benefit, two tax-free thresholds. I always struggle with that one. That's a considerable advantage. And you can also get two reasonable benefit limits. Reasonable benefit limits set the amount of concessional superannuation you can receive in a lifetime. Now, the recent... all of that has considerable financial advantage for people who have reasonably large superannuation benefits. The recent budget included a proposal that from 1 July 2007, lump sums and pensions paid to a person over age 60 will be tax-free and there will be no RBL. So for those retiring after age 60, those issues of a more favourable tax treatment no longer will apply if the proposals come to law. But for people who retire between 55 and 60, which a lot of people do, that ability to split contributions and get a more favourable tax treatment would still remain. So we still see it as an issue, even if the government's proposals do become law from 1 July 2007, as is proposed. In our submission, you probably noted we do, in fact, make recommendations about where you could, in fact, change the law so that it didn't discriminate. The other area that we have noted is the spouse rebate for spouse contributions. And this, again, is where any person can make an after-tax contribution on behalf of another person. So, in fact, it's not discriminatory in that respect. But if you then want to claim the rebate for the amount, which is up to the amount of $540, you can't do that if you are in a same-sex relationship. You're not eligible to receive the spouse tax rebate for the contributions made. The largest area, I think, that we dwelt on was in relation to death benefits. Prior to the 30th of June 2004, the law defined dependents as spouse, child and any other person financially dependent on fund members. This meant that fund trustees were prohibited from paying death benefits directly to a member's surviving same-sex partner unless it could be demonstrated that they were financially dependent on the deceased member. This at times became quite onerous and quite intrusive. From 1 July 2004, the surviving partner in a same-sex relationship can receive the death benefit from the deceased fund member as long as they satisfy the conditions of an interdependency relationship. And as far as we can gather, this legislation seems to be working reasonably well, and is generally not intrusive, unless in fact there is another claimant there where in fact you may in fact require some more evidence of that relationship. The legislation is in fact not compulsory, and I won't dwell on the way it's introduced, but a fund doesn't necessarily have to use this interdependency definition. Nevertheless, as far as we can tell, we can't find a fund that hasn't used it, except for the ones that I'll talk about in a moment. It would appear that most of the private sector funds are now using that interdependency definition within the category of people that they are now allowed to pay a death benefit to. This is required for most people that they amend their trust deeds, or where the trust deeds actually just referred back to the Superannuation Industry Supervision Act, that wouldn't have been necessary. The Commonwealth has not amended the statutes governing their schemes, however, and particularly the Commonwealth Superannuation Scheme and the Public Sector Superannuation Scheme, the PSS and the CSS, and the military schemes and the Parliamentary Contributory Superannuation Scheme have still not been amended. So the impact is that a death benefit isn't able to be paid to the same-sex partner of the members of those schemes. And this has quite profound effect on the members of those schemes, and in our submission we outlined some numbers there using the CSS as an example. We can provide other examples if you want, but I think those ones sort of indicate the problem that is here. We recommended that in fact the definition of spouse in each of the statutes affected that govern the Commonwealth schemes include a person who is in an interdependency relationship. So it really is just picking up what is allowed now and putting it into the statutes. A couple of minor areas. The definition of spouse in relation to life expectancy and market-linked pensions in the CIS regulations is still narrow, and it doesn't include a same-sex partner. What this, I suppose, means is that the kind of options that are available to heterosexual couples in structuring their pensions within the superannuation system in its widest sense are not available to same-sex couples. The budget proposals did look at some changes in definitions of pensions, it may be that this is the time to actually have a look at some of the requirements there. And the last one is a horribly nasty little technical thing called anti-detriment. In a nutshell, what it means is that when the rules were changed at one place to bring forward the taxation of benefits, they didn't sit well with the fact that you aren't supposed to pay tax on a death benefit. So there's an effort in the legislation to fix it up at the end. But in the fixing up, the superannuation funds are unable to claim a tax deduction for an anti-detriment payment and thus will not make such a payment to a same-sex partner unless the partner also meets the definition of dependent, and the definition of dependent in this case is a different definition from the one that includes the interdependency definition. I think that sums up where we are.
In the definition of dependent that you've just mentioned, is it wholly dependent or does it extend to partial
dependency? It's the financial dependency definition as far as I'm aware.
But is that wholly financially dependent or...?
The definition of financial dependence, I think, has always been rather unclear on how it's applied.
Okay. The first of those matters you mentioned was the contribution splitting, and in your submission you suggested two possible approaches. One was to amend the definition of spouse to include de facto couples of the same sex, or alternatively to put in the interdependency relationship solution. In other respects, you've just advocated as a solution the interdependency relationship. We wondered why you had two alternatives in that first situation, but not in later recommendations.
I don't think there's any real reason there. I think it's possible that just to stay with the interdependency relationship because that's the one that's being now used, that would be the simplest way to do it.
Are you aware of funds other than the Commonwealth legislated funds for Commonwealth public servants that have not picked up the interdependency?
We're not aware, but we haven't been able to do an exhaustive search. So it is possible, and we've even, I think, suggested there that the ones that could possibly not be there would be ones who are defined benefit and are old, closed schemes, close to new members perhaps, where there may be significant call on some further funding from an employer sponsor. Now,
yes,
we've not seen one, but we're not, you know, we haven't been able to, and we're not able to do an exhaustive
One of the criticisms that's been made in submissions about the interdependency relationship is that at the end of the day, someone in a same-sex relationship is dependent upon the exercise of a discretion by the trustee of the fund. Is that a discretion that's open to review if someone's not satisfied with the result?
Yes, it is, but that's only in some... Funds can have a binding death benefit a nomination or a non-binding. At first glance, it would seem that having a binding death benefit nomination would be probably the best, until you look at the way funds operate and what people do, in that they haven't got a current binding, up-to-date one. So I've seen trustees in, you know, anguish because there's nothing that's current, or there is something that's just current but it doesn't reflect what's actually going on. So it's not a clear-cut case whether having binding nomination or a discretion is actually the best way to go in all cases. So a lot of funds have gone with the binding, and some have said no, we'd rather have the discretion to see what's there. There is a the Superannuation Complaints Tribunal will take complaints after they've been through the trustee. There are some limitations there which I won't go into, but generally yes, there are avenues for complaints.
But even in binding nominations, the trustee would still have to address their mind to whether there was in fact an interdependency relationship. Would the trustee not?
The trustee would, because the trustee would have to assure themselves that in fact the binding doesn't in fact bind unless the categories are right.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Graham.
Just on that point, what happens when someone other than a same-sex partner, for example, another family member, makes a claim on the superannuation death benefit?
The categories that super funds can pay to are there, and the person would actually have to be a spouse, a child, a spouse including a de facto spouse, a child, or someone who was financially dependent, or someone in an interdependency relationship. If someone other than those categories came in, then they're not allowed to pay, or they'd be in breach of the Superannuation Industry Supervision Act. It's all in what's called the sole purpose. The purpose of superannuation funds are to do certain things, and one of them is to pay death benefits to particular people whose eligibility meets the legislation.
Okay.
Okay. Do you have any other questions?
Looking. No, I think that's covered my issues.
Dr. Anderson, thank you again for the submission. We found that very helpful because it gave us chapter and verse on some of these issues which other people were raising in a more general way.
Good.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.